Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. We are glad. The films are Official Secrets and Ad Astra. Did you like Ad Astra?
Well, let's get to that one in a moment, okay? Actually, these are both, they're both good movies. Neither one is a great movie, but they're both good movies, sure. But I'd like to start talking a bit about Official Secrets, which is really the movie that seems most timely right now, because it is about, we are dealing right now in American life with all sorts of interesting stuff about official secrets and things which are kept secret and all of that. And that is what Official Secrets deals with. And a movie directed by Gavin Hood. And it is, it starts in 2004, and it's based on an absolutely real case. And of course, all kinds of liberties were surely taken with the actual facts, but it does appear to outline what really happened in a pretty efficient and actually a pretty gripping, suspenseful form. It's about a woman, a British woman named Catherine Gunn, G-U-N, and she is played by Keira Knightley in a very, very solid performance, really good stuff. So again, it all starts in early 2004, and we meet Catherine Gunn, and she is a young woman who works for the British government, and her husband is interestingly not British. He is a Kurdish Turk, and he is now waiting for the outcome of his application for British citizenship, and that ends up playing a part in the film as well. And what happens is that she is working, again, for the British government, for a British intelligence agency. She speaks Mandarin. This is one of these movies where we're meeting these intelligence agents who speak all these different languages all over the place. So anyway, she does that, and part of her job is sort of using her Mandarin skills to do some spying from this central office in Britain. She's an operative, we might say. And what happens is that a secret email happens to come her way, which is saying that the intelligence agency that she works for is now being required to cooperate with the National Security Agency of America on a covert project to sort of eavesdrop on Security Council members at the United Nations, the idea being that the United States, and of course this is a time when Britain was very much allied, this is all the early days of the Iraq War, that the the United States, with help from Britain, wants to be able to blackmail members of the United Nations Security Council into voting yes on the invasion of Iraq. So that's the basic setup of this movie. All this is just sort of the premise. Catherine Gunn gets this, she runs across this secret email that there's going to be some manipulation going on of public opinion and official opinion. And that the idea is that the Brits are now expected to cooperate with the Americans in spying on members of the United Nations in order to blackmail them into supporting the invasion of Iraq, which, as we know now from our vantage point, is about to happen. She regards this as being very, very wrong. And it upsets her very, very deeply. So she makes a copy of the email and she gives it to an activist friend, and the activist friend goes to a journalist, and then the movie is well underway. The second part of the movie really sort of shifts its focus more to the journalist. As I mentioned, Catherine Gunn, who is really the main character of the movie, is played by Keira Knightley, and the journalist, who really has a whole lot to do in the second half of the film, is played by Matt Smith. And so that's what it's about. So yes, we are dealing with a spy movie here. And by the way, late in the film, Ralph Fiennes shows up. He is also very, very good in the film. It's a very, very well acted movie. So again, this is a movie which is really timely. First of all, we are very much still in America, at least, dealing with the fallout from the Iraq War. And, of course, we've heard all kinds of things. We've learned all kinds of things about a whole lot of really shady stuff that went on in the build-up to that war. And there's the Downing Street memo and all these various things and ways in which different supposedly honorable countries, such as the United States, colluded to manipulate opinion and to manipulate international relations so as to get support for that, the invasion of Iraq and the subsequent war, et cetera, and all this. This movie brings back a whole lot of that into our consciousness and gives us another opportunity to think about that while telling us a story which at least a lot of people in America, certainly me, weren't really familiar with, which is namely the role that this young woman played in trying to do something about this. The film starts out, Official Secrets starts out with Catherine Gunn standing in the court. She's been captured, she's been arrested, and she is now being asked whether she is going to plead guilty or not. She, remember, is British, so the charges was with violating their Official Secrets Act. And then we don't know how she pleads, and then the whole movie transpires, and then just before the end, we come back to that courtroom scene, and we find out whether she is going to plead guilty or not guilty, and what is going to come of that. And I will say that this movie, which has quite a few surprises along the way, really has a very interesting surprise twist just before the end. And it's the sort of thing that a really clever fiction writer might dream up, and yet this is what happened. These are the facts. And so, again, a movie really, stick with it until the end, because it really does pull one more real sort of zinger just before the end that I found quite surprising, and which is very effective dramatically, as well as in terms of the letting us know the actual history of what happened. So I will repeat once more that Keira Knightley gives a very, very solid performance. She's a good actress, always a pleasure to look at, and she really knows what she's doing. All the other people, secondary figures, her husband, who is played by Adam Bakri, various others, I mentioned Joseph Fiennes, do very, very, very solid performances. Now, the movie is not as original in its telling as I would have hoped. This is the kind of movie, and these things probably happened, but where people are meeting like in the middle of the night in a deserted parking garage to transfer some information and stuff like that. I guess things like that really do happen. That's the sort of thing that happened in the American movie All the President's Men, for example, about Watergate. And we've seen this kind of thing over and over again, and I wish that even if that's the way it really happened, that the filmmakers could have come up with a way of making it seem a little bit more surprising, a little bit more unusual. In that respect, this movie is really by the numbers. But, they're good numbers. Even though the movie is following a lot of well-established patterns of spy movies and intrigue movies and so forth, that is definitely the case. But it's such a good story, and it's about such important stuff. I was very, very pleased to see it. Gavin Hood's previous movie was a film called Eye in the Sky, which was a very technologically based thriller about drone strikes and remote control of spy apparatuses and attack apparatuses. Really a well-done film, just crisp and sure in every respect. So I certainly hope that Gavin Hood keeps on making these movies about these timely, important subjects that tap into the politics and the intrigues of our day, because he does a good job. And again, Official Secrets is one of those good jobs. Turning now to the future. Official Secrets deals with the recent past. Ad Astra deals with the not too far distant future. It is a science fiction movie. And it is a very, very ambitious science fiction movie by a guy named James Gray, who has made a number of previous films and is certainly not known for a science fiction-y kind of approach to cinema. But in this case, he has very much turned to science fiction. And he's made a film which I found very, very effective and very impressive without quite, for me at least, clicking on all cylinders all the time. I made the effort to go out and see it in IMAX. The movie is really visually dazzling, like a lot of modern-day science fiction movies. Well, like a lot of science fiction movies generally, dating back to the early years of cinema, but especially post-2001 A Space Odyssey, the great Stanley Kubrick film of the late 1960s. It is a movie which really dazzles with its sheer visual impact, its visual splendor alone. And the story is also also pretty darn interesting. So it was worth the effort to see it in IMAX. I would certainly suggest seeing it on a big screen, because it really is a movie that is made for that kind of treatment, to have that kind of impact. Interestingly enough, though, Ad Astra is a somewhat successful attempt to combine a really great big sort of solar system adventure story with all kinds of action and thrills and whatnot with a very intimate psychological epic. And that's the most unusual thing about the movie. And although I don't think it succeeds 100%, it succeeds a good part of the way. And again, it's just an interesting thing to see any filmmaker try to pull off, and pull it off pretty successfully, as James Gray does here. So we have, first of all, I should mention Brad Pitt. We have Brad Pitt, who is, you know, he's a really good actor, and he is just such a pleasure to look at. He is just a terrific looking guy, just a real movie star in every respect. He has that charisma. He has that je ne sais quoi. You sort of can't keep your eyes off him. I mean, you don't really have a whole lot of opportunity in Ad Astra to keep your eyes off him, because he is in most of the scenes. He plays an astronaut, and this is all in the future, and people go to the moon all the time, and they go to the other planets and so forth and so on. And he's a really good astronaut. Not only does he know all the stuff you got to know, and is he able to do all the stuff you got to be able to do in this future of interplanetary astronautism, but he has this terrific physical characteristic, which is that he just has this incredible calm. His heart rate never goes up, even in the most horrific, trying of circumstances. Something that Ad Astra pushes a little bit too hard is they're constantly giving him psychological tests, and he is sort of constantly passing them. And of course, you know, that's going to build up to some time when he's going to start facing some noticeable psychological stress. But anyway, he is this terrific astronaut in all these different ways. And he has another interesting trait, which is that his father was also a really, really great astronaut before him. Now, years earlier, his father, who, by the way, is played by Tommy Lee Jones, and we see him at various points in the movie on various sort of recordings and communications and so forth. At one point earlier on, our main character's father went off on a really, really important mission to some distant planetary destination, doesn't particularly matter right now where, and apparently disappeared. Apparently his mission was a failure, and he and his crew disappeared and have not been heard from since, and they have long been considered to simply be dead. They're gone. That was one of those lost missions that really does happen. Now something else is happening on the Earth and elsewhere, which is that what they call in the movie power surges. That doesn't seem to me to be a very clever term. I think of that something that I'm supposed to worry about in my computer, not about sort of interplanetary adventurism. But power surges are disrupting things, disrupting technology in very, very big ways, causing all kinds of major catastrophes. And nobody knows quite what is causing these power surges, but the Earth authorities, begin to get the idea that this might have something to do with that mission on which our main character's name is Roy, on which Roy's father disappeared so long ago. They now believe that Roy's father might still be alive out there in interplanetary space somewhere, and that he may be connected in some way, either causing or at least connected with these power surges, which are causing such a disaster. So Roy, our Brad Pitt character, is sent now to find his father, to see if he can contact his father, actually. And the idea is he's going to go to Mars, and from Mars, which is where they can send this certain kind of signal where he can possibly reach his father. So he goes to Mars, and he sends this sort of very formal sort of a signal to his father. Will you please, come back? We think you are still alive. Reveal yourself and help us figure out what's causing these power surges and tell us what you know. And that doesn't work. And so then he sends a much more personal appeal. Father, I miss you. I think that you are out there somewhere. And so that is when this movie turns into a real psychological film as well as an adventure film. When we have this astronaut now who becomes very, very concerned with the memory of his father, with the shadows of his father, who was an even greater astronaut than Roy is, sort of looming over him. him with his desperate wish that he could find his father, and of course total uncertainty on his part and ours over whether the father is in fact still alive out there somewhere, whether he is connected with all these disasters that are happening, and what if he is discovered by Roy that meeting will eventually might eventually bring about. So again, the movie is a very ambitious attempt to combine this big adventure story with all kinds of charging around between the planets, and here we have very, very similar to Kubrick's great movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, with this very intimate psychological movie of Roy thinking of his father, dreaming of his father, wondering if his father is still out there, and thinking always about the impact that his father's experience had upon his own life as an astronaut. There are things in this movie that are just sort of cockamamie. There's a scene with a monster. Where this came from, it's as if we suddenly went through a space warp into some totally different kind of a movie, and it's reasonably effectively done, but it's sort of pointless and doesn't really add anything. So again, Ad Astra is by no means a perfect movie, or even a close to perfect movie, but it's a very ambitious movie, a movie which combines the intimate and the epic, and I think it comes close enough to be well worth seeing. It's definitely one of the most thoughtful and unusual science fiction movies I've seen in a good long time. And so that is my somewhat science fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the film's Official Secrets, and Ad Astra.